Welcome to Whiskey Cask, cask strength conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 293 for December 12th, 2010. Coming up in a few minutes.
People don't really think about great Canadian whiskey, but there were so many great whiskeys that I tasted this year. Now, you know, we really need to acknowledge some of these.
That's Davin DeKergamo, the publisher of CanadianWhiskey.org, on the first ever Canadian Whiskey Awards. I'll go through the winners with Davin and discuss the renewed interest in Canadian whiskeys later on, along with the calendar of events, the emails of the week, the What I'm Tasting This Week department, and this week's chapter of the Whiskey Cast Holiday Gift Guide. First, though, let's look at the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. The biggest news of the week didn't come from a stillhouse, but from the boardroom. Fortune Brands announced plans to spin off its home improvement unit, sell its golf division, and focus on its Beam Global Spirits and Wine division moving forward. The split will take several months to accomplish. It comes after activist investor Bill Ackman bought the largest single stake in Fortune Brands. Analysts are speculating that some of the Beam Global brands may be sold off as part of the split, but the company has declined to give any specific plans yet. Of course, Beam is the biggest bourbon producer with Jim Beam, the small batch collection of bourbons, and Maker's Mark. It also owns Canadian Club, Laphroaig, Ardmore, and Teacher's Whiskies, along with the DYC brand sold in Spain and several smaller brands. Updating a story now from a couple of weeks ago, the U.S. importer hoping to sell the English whiskey company's whiskies is upset because U.S. regulators rejected their proposed label, which uses the words single malt whiskey. Heard back from the Treasury Department's Tax and Trade Bureau this week, spokesman Thomas Hogue isn't allowed to discuss specific applications, but in general terms, here's the official reasoning. Quoting now, TTB regulations do not provide a standard of identity for single malt whiskey, nor a regulatory definition for single malt. TTB does permit the use of the term single malt on whiskey labels regardless of the country of origin of the whiskey, provided that the reference is truthful, accurate, and does not create a misleading impression. Now here's one thing I've noticed in looking over labels that have received TTB approval for single malts coming from outside Scotland. They use the words single malt on a separate line from the word whiskey. Scotland, Canada, and Ireland do get different treatment for their whiskies, and many single malt scotches have been allowed to use the words on the same line. However, many, including Laphroaig, Glenmorangie, and other brands, keep those words separate. They use single malt scotch on one line, whiskey on the other, or they use single malt on one line and scotch whiskey on another line of text. It's been years since the regulatory definitions for whiskies have been updated in the U.S. There is a process, though, for requesting a change in the rules, and anyone can petition the agency to start that process. I've posted a link to the TTB's website at the WhiskeyCast website for more details. On another regulatory note, the Göteborg Beer and Whiskey Festival, scheduled for next month in Sweden, has been canceled. According to the organizers, local authorities in Göteborg refused to issue temporary liquor licenses for the event and said local policies prevented temporary licenses from being used to serve whiskey. Bonhams held its annual whiskey auction in New York this past week. A 50-year-old Macallan led the bidding at $11,900. Another one sold for almost $8,600. A 52-year-old Macallan from 1946 went for just under $5,000. And a 38-year-old Beaumont from 1964 went for just under $4,200. New whiskeys to mention this week. Tomaten has released two single-cask bottlings worldwide, a 1973 refill American cask. 184 bottles were released at 44% ABV. And a 1982 refill Sherry Puncheon that produced 560 bottles at 57% ABV. I received samples of both this week. I'll have tasting notes for them later on in this episode. Meanwhile, Ireland's Cooley Distillery has released the second edition of Turf Moor. It's a cask-strength single malt said to be the peatiest Irish single malt ever bottled at phenol levels of 50 parts per million. The first batch was released in June 2009. It's described as a small batch bottling. Just 20,000 bottles of this edition will be available. It also replaces Connemara's sherry finish in the Cooley lineup. Maker's Mark is winding up its annual holiday candlelight tours this weekend. This year, there's a new master distiller in Loretto. I caught up with Greg Davis recently.
What number are you now in the lineage of master distillers at Maker's?
In terms of the lineage, that's a very good question. Of course, Rob and the Samuels family, they're really who we take all of our direction from. You can call me the master distiller, but the Samuels family, you know, that's really who the guys are.
What did you think when they told you, we want you to be the master distiller?
That was a big responsibility. As Bill put it, better not screw it up, in some kinder words than that, yeah, so to speak. But really, you know, essentially what I'm here for is I'm the guardian. I'm the guardian of what it took to bring Maker's Mark into the realm that we know it today. And it's my job to make sure that we preserve that and preserve this Samuels family tradition.
Which is more pressure, being master distiller at Maker's Mark or a master distiller at Tom Moore Distillery?
Well, you know, they both have their pros and cons, that's for sure. It's very equal weight.
Are you settled in yet?
Oh, no. I'll never be settled in. You know, when I was with the previous facility, I was there for a little over 13 years. You know what? As a master distiller, you're learning every single day. That's part of the process. So to say that I'm settled in, no, not by a long shot.
Now, I know that Kevin Smith, your predecessor, had some plans for expansion in the works for the distillery. Are those plans still in place?
Yes, we are still looking to expand our process. Again, we will keep with the unit set approach, meaning that from one batch to one fermenter to one still.
Now, I have to stop here for a second. I have to stop because Parker Beam has joined us here in interrupting and tapping me on the shoulder. Parker, what's it like for a young pup like Greg here working in the bourbon business?
Hopefully that, you know, he'll come into his own eventually. But, you know, that takes a while.
I mean, he's only been doing this 13 years. You've been doing it for 50.
That's right. And I've still got a lot to learn, I'm sure. Something new crops up every day, so it's a constant learning process. So he's got the right basics down, so he'll be all right. He'll learn as he goes along. As he produces more bourbon, it'll probably get better.
Even though he's not a member of the Beam family.
That's right. So, but we'll take him under our wing if we have to, you know. We're very much open to helping each other out.
That's the thing about the bourbon industry, because what we're after is not getting a bigger slice of the pie. We're after making the pie bigger, because the slices will just come.
And this is that whole thing that everybody talks about among the fraternity of distillers in Kentucky.
Absolutely, absolutely, because Parker
we
should come here.
We all realize we make good bourbon. Our way is somewhat different, maybe, but it all comes out to be a good product, no matter which one of us does it.
Now, Greg, what lessons have you learned from Parker over the years?
One thing's for sure, no smoking. That's probably the biggest one. But the other thing is, you know, if you have a problem in this industry, you can just pick up the phone and give somebody a call. And that's probably been the greatest thing that I can say coming up in this, is because everybody's trying to make sure that everybody succeeds.
And also, if anybody needs a part that would hinder their production, we're more than glad to share the inventory of parts or ever what we can do, if it's loads of grain, barrels, ever what, to make your operation go, we all share it.
And that's what happened after the fire, what, in 96? Everybody came through and helped out Heaven Hill when you guys had the fire down in Bardstown.
We had a number of producers that helped reduce some of our inventory that we lost for a while.
Greg, tell me about Maker's 46 and how that has progressed, because I'm seeing that all over the country now. And I know it was Kevin's brainstorming as Parker leaves us. Thank you, Parker. But let's talk real quickly about Makers 46 now.
Real quickly, what we do with Makers 46 is we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. Now, if you think about it, the Samuels family has been doing bourbon for a long time. Kevin Smith knows how to make bourbon. I know how to make bourbon. The Samuels family knows how to make bourbon. But you know what? We really don't know a whole lot about making barrels. So what we did is we contacted Brad Boswell, fourth generation barrel maker. Now what Brad brought to the table was this new cooking process because he loves to play around. He calls himself a wood chef, so to speak. So we knew we had a great base. We knew we had a great product with Maker's Mark. What we wanted to do was just spread that out a little bit, broaden that spectrum a little bit. So we called Brad up. Brad came in, and he really worked with Kevin and Bill. He really worked really extensively and exclusively with those guys. What he did was he came up with a cooking process or this searing process. He's taking the aged French oak staves, and he's searing them. He's not charring them. He's not burning them. He's searing them. And this searing process releases a lot more of the vanilla and caramel flavors. And because we're using the aged French oak, we're keeping that tannin content down. And so we're keeping that astringency down because the whole maker's profile is flavor forward on the palate. That's one of our signature things of our product. So we wanted to maintain that, but we wanted a lot more wood intensity. We also wanted to pick up a lot more vanilla and caramel and get a little spiciness, so to speak, because as you taste the Maker's 46, it's an explosion of flavors on your palate, and the wood really comes off. The caramel really kind of helps round everything out. And then it finishes with almost like a slight cinnamon or spicy finish, which is just so keen to, again, not reinventing the wheel, but just giving you a different expression of Maker's Mark.
Now, this was billed by a lot of folks as the first new Maker's Mark recipe since 1953 when Bill Sr. came up with the original Maker's recipe. In fact, it really isn't, because there were a couple of makers that went into duty-free, the black wax, the gold wax versions, things like that. Everything about bringing those back?
Well, those were all just cosmetic. That was just the wax. What we have here, this is actually the different product. And what we look at is when we're looking at different product, we're not looking at changing packaging.
But those came out at different proof levels and things like that.
Correct, but it's still the same base. It still came from the same Maker's Mark. Now what we've done is we've changed that base to actually give you a different flavor profile.
Think about coming back with the higher proof versions?
I don't know. You never can tell.
You think Bill's done playing around for a little while here with new ideas, or is he going to let you have a little freedom to explore too?
As the guardian, it's always up to Bill. It's always up to the Samuels family.
By the way, the Maker's Mark Thoroughbreds and Redheads Weekend is set for April 8th and 9th in Lexington and Loretto, Kentucky. And that's the news, brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Brian Chamberlain is this week's trivia contest winner. He correctly answered last week's question, under which name are single malts from Knockdoe Distillery sold? The answer, of course, is Annock. Brian wins a $50 gift certificate from ForScotchLovers.com. Now here's this week's question. Name the distilleries in Scotland currently using Royal as part of their names. You can submit your answer at ForScotchLovers.com/WhiskeyCast, and there's a link at the WhiskeyCast website, too. The deadline is midnight New York time, Friday, December 17th, and I'll announce the winner on the next episode. By the way, time is running out to get free FedEx ground shipping from ForScotchLovers.com. Just use the promo code WhiskeyCast when you place your first order at ForScotchLovers.com. Also, don't forget to vote for the weekly winners in Isle of Jura's Wish You Were Here Travel Photo Contest. You can also enter your own photo of a place that inspires you. Tell the world why, and you could be on your way to Jura this August with a friend for a stay at the distillery's Jura Lodge, a new Olympus Pen camera, and a master class with National Geographic photographer Jim Richardson. Now, the weekly photo contest winners get an Olympus compact camera, and just voting gets you entered in the weekly drawings for Isle of Jura 10-year-old Scotch. Use the links at the WhiskeyCast website to get more details. Now let's look at the emails of the week, brought to you by Oban this time around. Got a very nice email from one of the listeners who ordered a set of the WhiskeyCast 5th Anniversary Nosing Glasses from Glencairn Crystal. I'm not going to use his name, the reason will be obvious. Glad I could support a good cause. Hopefully these will last longer than the usual Glencairn glass does in my hands. I seem to go through them in just a few months. A pair will go to my brother-in-law, though. He drinks out of thick tumblers and needs refinement. Hopefully I can turn him on to the podcast as well. Keep up the good work. In a few decades, these glasses will be as valuable as an early Jim Murray or Michael Jackson commemorative glass might have been. Winking there. That's a great compliment, and while I doubt they will ever be that valuable, I am flattered. There is still time to order your own set of these glasses and get them in time for Christmas or New Year's Eve dramming. They're $50 for a set of four. Just 25 sets were produced. $10 from each set will go to Charity Water. You can find more details and order them at the WhiskeyCast website. Bruce McLean emailed me with a question about importing whiskeys into the U.S. for personal use. The whiskey laws of the U.S. and other countries are just killing me. I was recently in Paris and purchased a bottle of the Nika in the Barrel whiskey at La Maison de Whiskey. The bottle was only 500 milliliters, and it is now gone, and I would like to get more. La Maison de Whiskey does not ship to the U.S. I contacted Asahi, the Japanese distributor, and they will not ship to the U.S. I found a store in Canada that has it, but they can't ship to the U.S. I am also a big fan of older Benrinnis, especially sherry-aged bottlings, and was excited to see that one made the recent Malt Maniacs list. I contacted the retailer, who is in Scotland, and they don't ship to the U.S. Now, I am not looking to break any laws, and I'm willing to pay all of the necessary taxes and duties, but is there any service or company that can help me obtain these and other whiskeys that are not available in the U.S.? Bruce, unfortunately, the answer is no. U.S. law does not allow you to have whiskey shipped to you from outside the country, even for personal use. If you travel outside the country, it's perfectly legal to bring it back as long as you declare it and pay any duties, as you did with the Nika bottling from La Maison de Whiskey. There are some online retailers who will try to ship to U.S. addresses, but I have to tell you, you do run the risk of your shipment being seized at the border. Matt Wooler emailed from Castle Hill, Australia, to share something his whiskey club is doing. Our club, Distant Thunder Whiskey Club, has its annual Dramcember event, which starts on the 9th of December and ends on the 9th of January, or Dramuary in their terms. Many of the club members listen to WhiskeyCast, so it would be great to slide them a little reminder if you're willing. Of course, Matt. Effectively, Dramcember is all about getting involved in the whiskey community by making a commitment to try a new whiskey you have never had before and telling your fellow drammers about it. Anyone can be involved. All you need to do is drink it and post about it. A blog site to post to is perfect, but even just using a Facebook page is enough, and in turn, a great way to expand the world of whiskey. If you want to find out more about Dramcember and even become involved, we have the details on our club's blog site, www.distantthunderwhiskeyclub.blogspot.com. Take it easy and keep on dramming. Matt, that's a great idea. Thanks for sharing it, and I'll post that link at the WhiskeyCast website as well. In fact, I'd like to adopt the idea for the WhiskeyCast Facebook page this month. If you'd like to take the pledge to try one new whiskey during Dramcember, share it with us on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page, too. Of course, you can always post your own comments or questions there, and you can also email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And the emails of the week are brought to you by Oban Single Malt Whiskey from the coastal town of Oban since 1794. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Whiskey events are starting to wind down for the holidays, but will get back into full swing in January. The A-Lounge at Albanac in London is holding a whiskey hub night on January 12th. You bring a bottle to share, and the hub provides all of the food and glassware. I'll be at the Victoria Whiskey Festival in British Columbia the weekend of January 21st through the 23rd. If you had hoped to go to the Göteborg Festival in Sweden, the Linköpings Whiskey Expo is just a week or two later on February 11th and 12th. Whiskey Live Tokyo is February 19th and 20th. Dramfest 11, February 25th through the 27th in Christchurch, New Zealand. And the first Woodford Reserve Bourbon Academy of the year will be March 5th at the distillery in Versailles, Kentucky. If you have a whiskey event coming up, email me. I'll add it to the calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. It's sponsored by Laphroaig. Just click the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay. Time now for this week's chapter of the Whiskey Cast Holiday Gift Guide, brought to you by Isle of Jura. One of the things I saw at many of the distillery gift shops earlier this year during my visits to Scotland were these really well-made copper replicas of the stills, but I couldn't figure out who was making them. I finally found out who makes them. The Balvenie is giving one away to members of its Warehouse 24 Club, and their email sent me straight to Andrew Scott of Highland Spirit in Elgin, who now sells his handcrafted stills and other whiskey gifts on the web.
Yeah, the one that the Balvenie have as a prize was that came about from one of the Balvenie brand ambassadors, David Mayer. He and a few of his colleagues who are brand ambassadors wanted a small still that they could take on their travels, but one where they could take it to bits and explain to people, how all the individual parts of a spirit still, how they all contribute to, the finished product and how it all works, but also so that it breaks down into a nice little box that they can carry around. They just proved that popular and a few people had seen them, and they approached me to see if I would make one as a prize, and it was a pleasure. And it's been fantastic for me. The amount of people have been admiring it and whatnot. It was a bit of a challenge actually to make one like that, as opposed to making a solid one that's welded together. And I thought it was going to be easier, but it turned out to be a bit more difficult to make everything matching exact and whatnot. But like I say, it was a pleasure to make.
Now, how long have you been making these replica stills?
Probably, I've been making them since I started work. I started work at the local coppersmiths back in 1985. And, a lot of the local people wanted to, could you make me one of these little model stills, just for cash? And, it was a good way of earning a bit of extra cash. The boss didn't seem to mind. What actually happened was I had an injury at my work which prevented me from going back and working. I used to make the full-size ones. But due to a back injury, I had to park in that job. And so I was encouraged by a few of the people in the industry, why don't you do it for, as a profession, start up your own company. So I did that and just built the company up over the last maybe 12, 13 years, just building it up and adding new products to the company, and getting feedback from all the distilleries now the website's online, I'm putting stills all over the world, to the whiskey enthusiasts. So that's how it came about. But of course, it's not just the pot stills that we make now. We've got quite a large itinerary of whiskey gifts and whiskey related gifts that have all came about through working for the distilleries, just gathering ideas and feedback and whatnot. So
how many different distilleries can you make replica stills for?
Well, we can do any distillery, although many of the stills are actually the same shape, or just slight variations of the same shape, which really all stem back to the alembic stills, which were made back in the 1400s, 1500s, but maybe the druids and alchemists and for brewing up their potions and whatnot. In fact, if you look at the alembic still in proportion, it's much the same as a spirit still, let's say, with a boil ball in it today. And I believe that's where the present shape stills, the design originated from. So, and they're still using that same design today. So, we can replicate any still. It's quite a difficult shape to actually replicate, but any shape's possible.
What's harder, making these little tiny replica stills or making the real thing?
Definitely making the real things, much more work. But, the small stills are, the smaller they get, the harder they are to make, to make them look, especially if they're completely handmade, like the way that I make my ones. Something about 2 feet high is an ideal size, I would say, for a coppersmith to make, as opposed to something 16 feet high. But, it's the same processes, the same skill required to achieve the shape and everything. But it's fantastic stuff to work with copper, To be honest, you get away with quite a lot, because if you make a mistake, you can just reheat it and it softens the copper again and start again, you know.
One of the things I've noticed in visiting some of the distilleries in Scotland is that many of the distilleries actually sell your products and sell your replica stills in their gift shops.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's good. I'm constantly trying. To date, I've only got about maybe 25-30% of the visitor centres stocking my goods, but that's mainly just due to the fact that at the moment, just working on my own, you know, I can only supply so many of the visitor centres, but I hope, certainly in 2011, to finally get round them all and get them into all the distilleries, because it seems to be that more and more of them nowadays are opening these visitor centres and basically cashing in on the tourism, because it's fantastic in Scotland. You know, the people come in their droves every year, which I think I miss that enthusiasm coming from the whiskey area, that this in Speyside. I think you take it for granted a wee bit. But it's a fantastic attraction, and every year it seems to be gathering pace. So a lot of the distilleries are building their own visitor centres, not just the distilleries, but just to try and cash in on that. So it's great for me.
And if someone wants to order one of your replica stills or your decanters or some of your other products, how can they find you?
Oh, well, they can catch me on the website, which is the easiest way to get my products out there, which is www.highland-spirit.com. And all the products are on there. And in fact, I've got some fantastic new products soon to be added to the site. I've been quite busy making these new dramming caps, copper dramming caps that are personalised, and they've been proven to be quite popular with the distilleries, so we're just trying to perfect the manufacture of them, just to cut the time down, to keep the price down, and we'll get them onto the website. We've also got a new decanter coming online as well, and also something that's quite interesting, we've got these new smuggler sets, which again was born from the brand Ambassadors, which comprises of a dramming cup, but also one of the old copper dipping dogs that, you know, mostly the employees used to use these for stealing the whiskey out of the warehouses. It's just a copper tube, about an inch diameter, maybe a foot long, with a chain or a rope attached, and it would just be dipped into the barrels and then hung down the leg of their overalls or boiler suit, and just walk out with it. I'm finding that a lot of people are liking these old artifacts, you know, and they just want to have them, you know, because there's a story attached to all these things as well, you know, and they prove to be great talking points, and therefore proven to be popular. So that's another item that I've been busy making throughout this year. But being on my own, it just takes a wee while to get things online and you've all to get everything packaged and properly finished and just manufactured to the right standard. It's quite exciting for me, you know, just to come up with some of these products and see how they sell. You never know what's going to sell, but when it comes to whiskey, you know, they're so enthusiastic. Whiskey enthusiasts throughout the world are fantastic, you know, but just anything whiskey they're interested in, and it's kind of fantastic.
Of course, there's a link to the Highland Spirit website at the WhiskeyCast website. Next time I visit Speyside, I'm going to try and stop by to pay Andrew a visit. Next time around, the final chapter in the WhiskeyCast Holiday Gift Guide. It's brought to you by Isle of Jura, in a world of its own. Last January, we discussed the state of Canadian whiskey in episode 236, recorded live with a panel of experts at the Victoria Whiskey Festival.
Devin DeKergamo was a member of that panel. He's a longtime member of the Malt Maniacs and a fervent advocate for Canadian whiskeys. In fact, earlier this year, he started the first website devoted exclusively to Canadian whiskeys at, what else, CanadianWhiskey.org. And this past week, he presented the first ever Canadian Whiskey Awards.
There really hasn't been a lot of attention paid to Canadian whiskeys, and certainly not in the awards category. What prompted you to start this?
Well, you know, I saw the success of so many other awards. I mean, you know, there's sort of award mania these days. And Canada kept getting left out, and, you know, and people don't really think about great Canadian whiskey, but there were so many great whiskeys that I tasted this year. Now, you know, we really need to acknowledge some of these, not just to let consumers know what great whiskeys are out there, but, you know, to let the producers know that, you know, people recognize that you are turning out some pretty good stuff. So you know, I put this together. I bounced the idea off a few people and off a few people in the industry as well, and it seemed like a pretty good idea. So we tried it, and man, it's been a huge success.
Tell me about the awards. Who did you honor this year?
Well, of course, there were three. First of all, we didn't go through, you know, giving medals to every whiskey that had a great score. I think that's something that will probably come in the future. But we just selected three connoisseur whiskeys, three whiskeys that are really like the best of the best. And because the whiskeys that are released in the United States are often not the same, not the same brands as the ones that are released in Canada, divided it into three categories. First, there's the domestic market. That's for whiskeys that at the time were just available in Canada. And Weiser's Legacy, of course, won that hands down. That's just terrific whiskey. It's so big and bold, and, you know, really, it's a fantastic whiskey. And, you know, it's like one of those, it tastes like some of the really good single malt whiskeys. I really like it, but it's rye, and you can really get the rye in it. Then also, you know, there was Caribou Crossing, which is available only in the United States. So for the export market, the connoisseur whiskey of the year is Caribou Crossing, which is a single barrel whiskey. So, you know, I guess each batch is just a little bit different because, you know, they only make a few hundred bottles from each barrel. And but it was a really wonderful, you know, creamy whiskey with lots of nice, clean wood in there. And, you know, it's just, it's really so much ahead of what else is happening in Canadian whiskey in the United States. So that there was that one. And then the connoisseur whiskey, which is available in multiple markets, is 40 Creek Confederation Oak Reserve. This is a whiskey that has got a lot of people talking. And, you know, John Hall runs Kittling Ridge Distillery, which makes 40 Creek whiskeys, and they make a few other whiskeys as well. And what he does is he matures his barley whiskey, which is really like a malt whiskey, separately, and he matures his rye whiskey separately and his corn whiskey separately, and he brings them together to make what he's a winemaker, so he calls this a maritage. You know, it's a blended whiskey, blending three very flavorful whiskeys together. But what he did is a few years ago he found some oak trees that were growing not far from his distillery. His distillery is near Niagara Falls. And down in Ancaster, he found some very old oak trees, which by coincidence, Canada's a little over 150 years old as a country. These trees had sprouted about the same time that Confederation took place. So he had these, and it was it's a managed forest, so they were taking these oaks out of this forest in any case. So he bought these oaks and shipped them down to Missouri and got them made into barrels, brought them home, and he then aged his whiskey after he had mixed the three together. He always took three mature whiskeys, blended them together, and he put them into these oak barrels to mature. And it took him a few years, actually, to get them to something that he thought was palatable. It's just staggering. It's beautiful whiskey. It feels so good in your mouth, and it's very flavorful. He really has pulled something off. So that's the whiskey for multiple markets, whiskey of the year.
And then you gave out three awards of excellence as well, right?
Well, yes, and that's intended to encourage people to do the good things that they are doing. And there are other great things going on in Canadian whiskey as well. But, you know, I want to keep it very small and tight this year. So there really was some prestige associated with getting one of these medals. I don't know if you've tasted White Owl whiskey. But
I have
White whiskey. White whiskey, you know, is the big thing in the States right now. And white whiskey is, it's just straight off the still, just put it in a bottle and sell it. It's essentially vodka. In Canada, it would be called vodka. Because up here, if it's not aged for at least 3 years, you can't call it whiskey. But we used to have a tradition in Canada of making what we called whiskey blanc. That's whiskey, that's white whiskey. And we would take whiskey, but again, it had to be matured. But it was matured in metal containers for a minimum of 2 years. And this was hugely popular in Quebec. Well, what they've done at Highwood Distillers is they've taken mature whiskey, 10 years old, matured in wood, though, so it tastes like rye whiskey. It tastes like real mature whiskey. And then they filtered the color out of it. They use some charcoal to take the color out. So now they've got a white whiskey that tastes like real whiskey, but is so adaptable to cocktails, to mixing. And you know, they did some focus groups with this new whiskey, mixing this, and they had Grey Goose vodka, making the same cocktails using both. And they found that the female drinkers, 100% of the time, not even once, 100% of the time, preferred the cocktails that were made with this White Owl whiskey. Mm. And I think it caught them a little bit by surprise just how popular it's been, because they really had a hard time keeping up with the demand for this. It was just available in Alberta first, I think maybe in BC, but it's going across the country now, and it's really such a novel idea. So that's the Award of Excellence for Innovation. And we also wanted to look at some companies that had really helped raise the profile of Canadian whiskey internationally. I mean, we sell $500 million worth of Canadian whiskey to the States, but just the same, the reputation isn't always what we would hope it would be. But so we saw that, you know, the product placement that Canadian Club had done. Well, first of all, you know, they did it with the Badman, and that was very successful. And, you know, people really, a new demographic looking at Canadian whiskey. But now they've done it again with this Boardwalk Empire, and, you know, built around the Prohibition and how Canadian Club really was a major whiskey during Prohibition. I should point out that Prohibition is not what launched Canadian whiskey in the States. It was actually the American Civil War 50 years earlier when Canadian whiskey really took off, and it was because we had our bottled in bond law, you know, so that our whiskey always had to be aged. And, so, but in any case, the Canadian Club got their whiskeys into these, and I'm getting, you know, all kinds of queries on my website for you know, what is Don Draper's whiskey? You know, what's Nucky Thompson selling? Things like that. So you can see this is really hitting a new demographic. So for Canadian Whiskey Profile, Canadian Club has taken that, and that's I think a really it's really great that we see that new drinkers are coming to Canadian whiskey and recognizing the quality that is there. So those essentially are the awards of excellence.
And there was the one for Crown Royal Black as well, for the brand extension.
Oh my goodness, I forgot about that. Yes, Crown Royal Black, probably the biggest Google search in Canadian whiskey is Crown Royal Black. This is a whiskey. Now, it still tastes like Crown Royal, but it's robust. It's rich. It's just full of bourbon flavors. It's just a really rich whiskey, and it's taking off like crazy. They couldn't keep it on the shelves in the beginning, and, you know, because really, it just really, again, brought Canadian whiskey to a whole new group of drinkers who like that rich bourbon flavor, but are looking for something, you know, that's familiar with, like Canadian Club. Canadian Club, of course, is the best-selling Canadian whiskey in the world. But to launch a new product like that, and now they're talking about bringing it into Canada because it has just been so successful. Now, it's really kind of a unique whiskey because it's you can really feel that there's a lot more whiskey in your mouth when you're tasting this. Some of the ABV is a little bit higher on it as well. But they formulated something that would really sort of just be like an in-your-face Crown Royal. So Crown Royal Black, yeah, it certainly deserved that brand extension.
And it really seems, as you've said, like we're seeing a renaissance in Canadian whiskeys.
It's so delightful. Yes, we are. Now, you probably remember about 10 or 12 years ago that Corby's tried to introduce three real connoisseur whiskies to the market. This was the Canadian Whiskey Guild, and the whiskies were really quite nice, but they just didn't take off. This time, the whiskies seem to be taking off, and the other thing that's happening is we're getting small independent bottlers starting to bottle Canadian whiskey, like Proof Whiskey, bottled by an independent company, and Stillwater's Distillery are bringing out some whiskies that they have, you know, purchased from another a major distiller. They've blended them themselves, and
the Stillwater's guys, I should explain, are familiar to WhiskeyCast listeners as Barry Stein and Barry Bernstein. The guys in Toronto that set up their own company that have been profiled a number of times here on the show.
Yeah, that's the guys. But what they're doing now is that they're making single malt whiskey. But of course, you know these guys, Mark, so you know how patient they are.
Yeah.
They're not going to release that whiskey until it's perfect. But in the meantime, and they're selling also a single malt vodka. In the States, it would be called white whiskey. But here they call it, my goodness, it's so malty, it's beautiful. It tastes like really creamy new make. But what they've done is they've decided, well, they want to release some Canadian whiskeys now as an independent bottler. So they're buying, nice casks from some of the major distillers, and then they're blending these, and they're blending in a little bit of their single malt with this as well. And then they're releasing, they're just in test marketing right now with these, trying to So what I'm saying is that we have people in Canada as independent bottlers coming along. We saw what happened in Scotland with the independent bottlers. They really, really raised the profile of some Scottish distilleries by bringing out sherry casks, you know. And that's exactly what they're doing. Here with independent bottlers, cherry picking the best casks and bringing them out. Well, you saw Whistlepig. Whistlepig, you know, a fantastic Canadian whiskey, again, brought up by an independent bottler. And that really had people talking all year. That was that's a fantastic whiskey. So yeah, you're right. There are some, we're starting to get some profile, and there's some exciting things happening with Canadian whiskey. We've always had these great whiskeys up here in Canada, but people never find out about Gibson's 18. My goodness, you're going to have a hard time finding a better whiskey than that anywhere. It's got a clean, crisp wood in it, and it feels nice in your mouth. It's a really great whiskey. And, if they could only make 18-year-old whiskey in a shorter period of time, they'd have that in the American market, too. But the trouble is, it takes so long.
Now, one that I found that I tasted earlier this year that was really interesting was the Glenbretton ice wine finish, because Canada is known for ice wines, but the guys at Glenbretton decided to finish some whiskey in an ice wine cask.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting experiment, wasn't it? They did that. They did two versions of the ice wine whiskey. They did one which was a 10-year-old, which was bottled for Spain. They had got a big order from Spain for ice wine. And this is ice wine that's made in Nova Scotia, by the way. And they sent that over there, and demand was high enough that they started releasing it in Canada as well. So there was a bit of that around. It's gone now. But they did an older one. If I remember, it was 18 years old, 16 or 18, I can't remember, that they also finished in ice wine casks. So that was a beautiful whiskey. The best thing coming out of Glenbretton, though, is that Battle of the Glen. It's a 15-year-old single malt whiskey. My goodness, they really have got it figured out. It just tastes beautiful. It's a very robust whiskey, rich, feels good in your mouth, but it's got such complex flavors. They really have pulled it off with that that Battle of the Glen. I really enjoy that whiskey a lot. So yeah, Dunbrenton or Glenora Distillers, they're really starting to put out some nice stuff out there. So I'm glad you like the ice wine whiskey.
And the Battle of the Glen, for those who aren't aware, refers to the infamous battle Glenbretton fought with the Scotch Whiskey Association over the right to use the name Glenbretton.
Yeah, it's interesting. Scotch Whiskey Association tried to put them out of business, and actually what they did is they put them on the map. But if you go to the bar, because Glenbretton operates an inn also, or Glenora Distillers, they operate an inn. It's a very beautiful destination. They get a lot of European whiskey lovers going there for vacation. They have a bar, and they are proud of their Glenbretton whiskeys, and they know their Glenbretton whiskeys are as good as anybody else's, so they've got everybody's single malts on their bar. Of course, everybody buys Glenbretton because they're there. But they, with the Scotch single malts, they have everyone you can think of as long as the name doesn't start with Glen. It's so funny, you know. It's hilarious. You can get Dalmore, you can get Akatosh, you can get all these, but you can't get Glenmore and G or some of these common ones, because if the name starts with Glen, they don't want anybody to be confused and think that, you know, Glenbretton is a Scotch. And, well, good for them. It's better than half the Scotches out there anyway. So, yeah, it's funny.
Sometimes you have to approach this stuff with a sense of humor.
These guys are characters with a huge sense of humor, and you know, it's nice that they also know how to make good whiskey, too.
What should people be watching for in the coming year from Canadian Whiskies?
Well, I would be watching for more independent bottlings. I think there will be a couple of very old whiskies released in the new year. I'm not sure if they're going to actually state the age on the labels or not, but there are going to be some whiskeys, I think, from the 60s, maybe released in the new year, at least one. And so I think that people should watch for more of the connoisseur whiskeys. I think that Sazerac will probably be releasing some new high-end Canadian whiskeys in the American market. You know, with the success of Caribou Crossing, I think that they're thinking, well, you know, maybe we should, you know, do a little bit more. So I think that this is going to be a good year for Canadian whiskey. I think there'll be some new ones out there. But, you know, the trouble with Canadian whiskey is these guys are so secretive, you know, and all of a sudden something fantastic arrives on the market, and you think, man, if they'd only told us a few months ago, we'd be lining up to buy it. So maybe they've got to learn to you know, toot their own horn a little bit more.
But, it's Canadian modesty.
Yeah, I know. Why is that? I've got it, and I get yelled at for it all the time. But, yeah, we do tend to keep our best cards up our sleeves.
There's a link to CanadianWhiskey.org at the WhiskeyCast website. Devin will join me again next month at the Victoria Whiskey Festival. This time around, we'll have a live blind tasting of whiskeys that could prove to be very interesting. That's the weekend of January 22nd. More details later on. In the meantime, the What I'm Tasting This Week department returns. Earlier I mentioned the two new single cask releases from Tomatin. Let's start off with the 1973 single cask. Number 25602 was a refill American oak cask that produced 184 bottles at 44% ABV. The nose is complex and rich with notes of cinnamon, dried apples, toasted bread, and oak. The taste is spicy with touches of dry white wine, licorice, and a lime tartness with a great mouthfeel. The finish is lingering with a tartness that reminds me of fresh key lime pie. I'm scoring the Tomatin 1973 single cask a 92. Now the 1982 single cask number 92 was a refill sherry puncheon, 560 bottles at 57% ABV from this one. The nose dry and fruity with a hint of smokiness and charred wood, orange peel and slightly nutty. The taste is mouth-filling, dry and spicy with a cinnamon blast that fades to reveal brandied orange peels, hazelnut, and a touch of red grapes. The finish is lingering, spicy, and dry with a note of brandy, and water adds a lot of complexity with syrupy caramel notes. I'm giving the Tomatin 1982 single cask a 93. I mentioned the Diageo Classic Malts special releases a few weeks ago and received a set of samples this week.
Let's start off with the Throsk 20-year-old. This Speyside distillery is rarely ever released as a single malt, and this is the first time it's been part of the special releases series. It's bottled at 58.1%. The nose is dry, aromatic, and slightly peppery, with hints of malt, hazelnut, and straw. Neat, the taste has an intense alcohol burn that fades to reveal brown sugar and molasses notes, hints of lemon and lime, and a slight saltiness. Water opens up malty notes and smooths out some of the citrus touches. The finish is tart, long, and aromatic with lemon and lime notes. I'm scoring the Athrusk 20-year-old limited edition a 90. Earlier I mentioned Dram Sember as the impetus to try out a new whiskey, and the Glen Spey 21-year-old is that one for me this week. It's also a first-timer in the Special Releases series, and like Athrusk, it's rarely available as a single malt. The limited edition was distilled in 1989, bottled at cask strength 50.4% ABV. The nose is a complex mix of brown sugar, caramel, brandy, and honey notes. The taste is very smooth, notes of cinnamon, brown sugar, and a hint of lemon peel. The finish is long and spicy with lingering cinnamon notes and a hint of licorice that comes out as the cinnamon fades. There's a great balance and smoothness here. I'm scoring the Glen Spey 21-year-old limited edition a 94. This is one I'd like to see more of. Of course, you can find all of my tasting notes in the WhiskeyCast smartphone apps. The Android version is sponsored by Benromic, and the iPhone and iPad version comes to you courtesy of the Glenrothes. By the way, watch for a minor update to the iPhone version in the next few days at the iTunes App Store. My notes are also available at the WhiskeyCast website, where you can find links to the Facebook page and Twitter feed, the calendar of events, the holiday gift guide, and a complete archive of past episodes. You'll also find links for the WhiskeyCast store, powered by Amazon.com, and the WhiskeyCast 5th Anniversary Nosing Glasses, if you're still looking for the right holiday gifts. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. Finally, it's time for my annual reminder / lecture. With the holidays coming up, please remember to set a good example for other folks, drink responsibly, use a designated driver, and never, ever drive after you've been dramming. Make sure your friends don't either. I've been a journalist for many, many years and have seen far more than my share of alcohol-related car crashes. There is never a good reason to drive after you've been drinking, period. It only takes one mistake to change lives forever. Please don't make that mistake. That said, please enjoy the holidays. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2010. And comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you again that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.